From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 29th edition of our conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the USSR. And again, Luciana, we're promising them that we're going to wrap up this segment that deals with the question of Leninism versus Trotskyism, or really of the role that both each Lenin and Trotsky played in the revolution, and then after Lenin's death in Soviet history. I think yes. Where we left it at a point where I had kind of summarized last week that at each place, whether it's in 1903, 1905, 1912, 1917, and beyond, where the circumstances presented a choice for the first the composition of the party, and then the tasks of that party once it was composed, Lenin and the people around Lenin made choices that turned out to be correct, and Trotsky was in opposition to them in each and every case, sometimes holding himself out as more of a socialist or a revolutionary or a leftist, what Lenin would call ultra-left, and in other cases clearly right, and this is going down even into the 40s when he starts to collaborate with HUAC. So maybe we can sort of parse this out a little more fully, and then we can put it to rest.
Very good. So, yes, you are quite. You did quite a good, comprehensive introduction. So we are looking at the events of the year 1917, the year 1917 leading to the Bolshevik Revolution of October. And indeed, we are looking at Trotsky's role in this revolution. Now, we said that his role in action is not in dispute. It is acknowledged that he fought well, but he was not the leader of this revolution. He was accepted into the Bolshevik Party, as we mentioned, in late July 17. He was voted head of the Petrograd Soviet, but he had come in too late to have been part of the discussion, the debates, the planning, the voting and decision of the Central Committee of the Bolshevik Party to actually earn the credit of having been the mastermind of the revolution. This had been Lenin. And so we ask, why is it important to examine Trotsky's role? Isn't that in the past? Shouldn't we just move on and forget about this guy? We can't, because his opposition to the character of the Bolshevik Party, as we know, as you mentioned from the beginning, had been consistent from 1903 to 1917 and after. And the Bolshevik Party was the party of the revolution. So because his oppositional character of the Bolshevik Party, and this character was select, it was decided that the Bolshevik Party would be run by informed people, not a club, not open right. to everybody. Right. And also because his characterization of Stalin's government as a betrayal of the revolution,
right.
in my view, and I'm sure helped the Western left in particular, to disown the Soviet Union as a deformed worker state. Right. Now, this requires just a bit of clarification. By Western left, I mean all those parties after 1945 that formed in Europe as communist parties, and which in 1956, when Khrushchev made his secret speech denouncing Stalin and demonizing him, the Western left had a vacuum, was faced with this terrifying notion that the Soviet Union had been a terrible mistake, had betrayed the revolution. They had nothing left.
You know, what's interesting, interesting about that is an interesting set. This is actually a set of nested contradictions. The one that is necessary, first of all, contextual thing that's necessary is that these left parties and communist parties, quote-unquote, that were established in the post-World War II Western Europe were done under a condition of American occupation.
That's right.
The United States occupies Western Europe. Italy, Germany, France, the Benelux countries, all of it. And then in the other countries that ultimately, many of which ultimately became part of the Warsaw Pact, I mean, these are countries that were the subject of Yalta and Potsdam and all of that, you know, for what was going to happen in the post-war environment. The U.S. was very well represented there also, as were the bourgeois leadership and industrialists of the pre-war period, many of whom were actually Nazi collaborators, Hitler was rising. So, you know, the pedigree of these so-called leftists and communists is not only suspect, it's clear that collaboration with Western capital was, you know, exactly their purpose and their job. That's one thing. The other is, on the question of Trotskyism generally and its critique, the ultimate critique that the Soviet Union was a distorted worker state, and the distortion being an accusation of bureaucratism and insularity. In other words, it's a small club that runs everything. Is sort of the mature version of the embryonic critique back in 1903 to 1905, when Lenin says the party should consist of people, it should be a small group of dedicated revolutionaries who are highly educated in the history of society and economics and revolution and government and all of the things that are necessary to actually conduct a successful revolution. And on the other hand, Trotsky saying we should let everybody in, and mm-hmm. we should make, further down the road, he says, and we should make common cause with the bourgeoisie because that's the next step in development. So in other words, these professional revolutionaries that Trotsky rails against in 1903 end up being the bureaucratic state that he rails against in the 1920s and 30s.
Precisely.
And yeah. He doesn't posit an alternative for how to successfully establish socialism, because, you know what, it hasn't happened anywhere else by another model. Perhaps they were on the way in Chile for about 10 minutes in the early 70s, but not many examples elsewhere.
Well, yeah. Well, the question is, where did the Trotsky revolution succeed?
Nowhere.
I mean, I can't think of a single example. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to remind people of the discussion we had about what happened in Barcelona, for example, where this technique actually ended up undermining the civil war, Spanish Civil War, in favor of fascism.
Yeah. Lenin called it adventurism, that is, jumping in and not considering what the forces are with whom you could actually ally to get the support for the proletarian, which in certain, especially in Spain, was not, other than in Catalonia, was not big. But yes, Spain is a good example of the complete destructive influence on the fight against fascism,
right,
which was what was threatening the republic.
Right.
You know, I mean, you have fascism at the gate, and you're going to build out of that opportunism, out of that opportunity, you're going to have jump from well-armed fascism into a proletarian revolution.
Yeah, I mean, what ended up happening was the Spanish fascism ended up being the most thoroughly established fascism in Europe.
Yeah, and the most long-lasting.
Right.
Yeah. So, it is consequential to talk about Trotsky not as something that happened in the past, but it's something that had that affected the left, when particularly in the 50s. As you say, yes, Europe was occupied, and it ordered the Communist Party to disarm. It didn't order the Communist Party to disarm. It ordered the government they put in place to disarm. That was, you know, not to continue the resistance into the revolution. The occupation did that. The United States preferred a return of the monarchy in Italy. Occupation attempted to put the French Communist Party out of law, illegal, same in Italy, except that people, even the governor, the government established by the Allies said, look, we can't make the Communist Party illegal because we would have a civil war. They're the ones that are trained, armed. That's why the arm, you know, taking away the arms was important. So the occupation has had its role, okay? It's really effective role in terms of having the, you know, reestablishing the fascist police in Italy, etc., all the instruments of oppression of the people's struggles. But ideologically, what happened in 1956 was this horrendous revolution, revelation, apparently horrendous. I mean, horrendous it was, this that the whole period from 1917, or at least conveniently from Lenin's death in 1924 to 1956, the Soviet Union was a horrendous counter-revolution, and that it was not communist, that it created mass killings, that it was horror, and then Khrushchev supported that. And then where did the parties go? They couldn't be associated with Moscow anymore. Though, you know, the Italian Communist Party continued until the 70s to be aligned with Moscow. But then in the 70s, the Berlinguer leadership of the Italian Communist Party recognized NATO, which is a big deal, in order to make an alliance with the Social Democrats, with the Christian Democrats, to share in power. So the demonization of the Soviet Union created the conditions in which we are now, which we have no parties of the proletariat anywhere, but in a few places on the earth, which happen to be very populated, and I think it's China. A Communist Party is in Vietnam, in Laos, and in Cuba. And
DPRK.
Excuse me a sec.
Yeah, and DPRK as well.
Yeah. But you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that this double demonization, one of the Bolshevik Party as an organizing structure of the state and of its policies, the demonization of this party, and the demonization within the person of Stalin had a tremendous negative, destructive effect on the progress of the left in Europe.
Yep. And in the United States, too.
And in the United States.
And ultimately,
in the Anglo, actually Australian, you know, in the Anglo countries, in particular. Now, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's right. And that ended up coming back home. Those were chickens that came home to roost in the Soviet Union, in the person of Mikhail Gorbachev and that entire trend, which then was a gift that kept on giving. You had what happened in the USSR, which ultimately, you know, ended in the dissolution of the USSR, and the surrender of most of the nation states to Western capital. And then the dissolution almost simultaneously, this was in December of 1991 in the United States, of the Communist Party of the USA with the Committees of Correspondence. This was a group named after the group in the First American Revolution in like 1773, where they were organizing the colonies against Britain. Inside the Communist Party, there was a group called the Committees of Correspondence. And they essentially proposed, Angela Davis, Pete Seeger, and Gil Green proposed in December of 91 that the party abandon Lenin and go multi-party, in other words, become like a Euro-communist party or whatever. And, you know, that's what's left of the left in the U.S., and it follows a direct lineage from Trotsky in 1903 through the things you were just describing.
Yes, that's right. If you abandon Lenin in times of such as now, intense imperialism, you are promoting imperialism. You're letting it go on. So you know, so if you're on the left and you abandon Lenin, you abandon his theory of imperialism or his critique of imperialism. And you can't be a Marxist. You can't be on the left and not be a Marxist-Leninist in these times.
Well,
yeah.
That's right.
So, I mean, it was Lenin who developed the theory of imperialism, who identified its features, why it must go that way, why capitalism must be imperialism, how financial capital takes over and monopoly, and how it inevitably leads to war.
Right.
Inevitably, you know, I mean.
Well, it gives the class war an international and a nation state context. You have, an elite that governs the colonial powers. In essence, now that's been distilled down to the elite that governs the U.S., EU, UK, Japan, South Korea, Australia, a couple of other little spots. Those capitalists dominate the nation states, the military of the United States, and of NATO, and of whatever's left of CETO or whatever they call it this week.
Yeah.
And they direct that to extracting value from both internally and the rest of the world. And in terms of extracting value from the rest of the world, there are governments that are either not completely at the beck and call of Western capital, or that are themselves hostile to it and assert their own sovereignty, and thereby lies the condition for war. You have nation states that are competing over the resources, most of them competing for control of their own resources against Western capital.
Yeah, exactly. So to examine, you know, Trotsky's role is not to talk about the past. And, it's anti-communism, and it is affecting us all in terms of fighting imperialism. So anyway, so it is important to examine Trotsky's role because, as we said, his opposition to the character of the Bolshevik Party from the beginning was consistent. He tried to undermine it because his characterization of Stalin's government as a betrayal of the revolution helped the Western left, as we said, in particular, to disown the Soviet Union. You dissolve the Soviet Union, you dissolve the attempt at communism, to disown the Soviet Union as a deformed worker state. So in both his attacks on the party as an oppressive caste of bureaucrats, and his demonization of Stalin as not Lenin's faithful lieutenant, You know, they happened to coincide and sustain the anti-communist Western legend of the Soviet Union that is dominant narrative of Western propaganda to this day. Now, Trotsky, I will say that you know, we have Trotsky, we have Khrushchev. Why the hell did he change the name of Stalingrad to Volgograd? And do we think, you know, is there a connection between Trotsky, who was more on the left than, let's say, the right wing of the Bolshevik Party, which was the Bukharinite branch?
Right.
And so Khrushchev actually came out of that kind of branch. We're talking about Trotsky as a counter-revolutionary, really. And no matter what he thought in his head, he was. So, you know, in fact, you could say that it was not Stalin that betrayed revolution, but betrayed the revolution as it was conducted by Lenin, but Trotsky. If he ever had any real commitment to that revolution, the one that succeeded. It is significant that Trotsky joined the Bolsheviks at the moment when their victory was a great possibility.
Right.
So the Bolshevik Party until Khrushchev actually remained a solid bedrock of the socialist state. It was the organ that implemented socialism in the Soviet Union, as we have amply detailed earlier, and it was Stalin's government that made sure that socialism advanced and defended itself from fascism and defeated it. So Trotsky, by attacking the party and its leadership, I mean, acted as a counter-revolutionary.
Yep.
Until Lenin died, Trotsky held his opposition in check. But in 1924, he practically offered, and I think this is crucial, Trotskyism as an alternative ideology, though he called it the continuation of Leninism. Trotskyism, and we haven't identified its features yet, and I don't know if we'll succeed today, as an alternative ideology. I mean, the features were permanent revolution and a condemnation of socialism in one country. Those were the biggest two aspects of it. So he offered Trotskyism as an alternative ideology, though he called it Leninism. He called himself a Leninist. So in 1924, after Lenin died and Trotsky mounted this Trotskyism campaign that is the true heir to Lenin, it was 1924 that Stalin asked, if Trotskyism is Leninism, why do we need this new word, Trotskyism?
Right.
And it was in 1924 that Stalin had to take on Trotskyism before the committee, the Politburo, etc., to expose its ideological flaws. Now, you know, the first charge in this Trotskyism movement formation, let's call it, was that Trotsky played a special role in the October Uprising. Now, we have, in the last recording, in the last conversation, we exposed that, we analyzed that, and I don't want to go over all that again, but and we mentioned that he just to summarize, he joined the party late, he didn't know what was going on. I mean, he hadn't been part of the decisions, and he was made the chief of the Petrograd Soviet, and right. followed whatever the decisions had been made
right.
by the committee. So he followed orders.
Right.
Now, the other thing we haven't discussed is the charge by Trotskyism that the Bolshevik Party had been ineffective. that, and Stalin says that listening to Trotsky, you would think that during the whole period of preparation from March to October, the Bolshevik Party did nothing but mark time, that it was being corroded by internal contradictions, and that it hindered Lenin in every way. That had it not been for Trotsky, nobody knows how the October Revolution would have ended. This is, okay, so...
It's just not true. It's just not true. I mean, there's no there's zero
right.
evidence of it, and an awful lot of evidence to the contrary. A huge record of it, yeah.
Exactly. And Stalin explains very carefully what actually happened between February and October, and explains the major facts of this period and why the Bolshevik Party could not act in between February and April and different phases of the year. So he says that between March and April, what you had was a kind of parallel government. Both you had in power or ruling both the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie, which was the Cadet Kerensky, the bourgeois revolution of February. You had it coexisting with what had been formed in this period, the group, the dictatorship of the proletariat and peasantry. It wasn't, you had the proletariat and the peasantry and the bourgeois revolution and the bourgeoisie running the country or at the head of the country. The proletariat and the peasantry trusted the bourgeois revolution. They believed that it was striving for peace. They voluntarily surrendered their power to the bourgeoisie. And so they became an appendage, these Soviets of the bourgeoisie, these type of Soviets, these ones that formed in February, became a mere appendage of the bourgeoisie. And there was yet no serious conflict between the two. So, meantime, in the Bolshevik Party, the idea, the pre-revolutionary platform of the direct overthrow of the government was clear and definite, but it was no longer possible to go straight for the overthrow of the government because the government was connected with the Soviets.
Right.
And the biggest influence within the Soviet Party was for the defense of the country, that is, for the war. They were called the defensists. So the party, if it took on at that point the February Revolution, the
Kerensky
government.
Right.
The party had to wage war against both the government, the bourgeoisie, and the Soviets. That war would not have happened.
Right.
It was
died.
Beyond their
right.
strength. They had two. They had their own, they had the proletarians and the peasantry and the bourgeoisie.
Right. That's right.
To fight.
And it also wouldn't have been representative of the society, by the way, had they not looked to the Soviets for, basically as one of the legs of power. All right, we have to stop there. I want to get next week, I don't know, maybe it'll take us a week or two to get there, but one really important question with respect to Trotsky is how Trotsky viewed imperialism, what imperialism was. And it's really extremely relevant to the situation today. Essentially, Trotsky, his perspective on this, as detailed by Stalin in 1932, for example, resembles almost identically the idea of globalism here, that the sweeping away of national boundaries, even if it's done by imperialism, is a step forward. And Lenin had an entirely different view, and that's, I think, where we'll pick it up next week. Luciana, thank you very much. We'll see you, talk with you next week.
My pleasure, as always. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.